Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today I have Miss Karen, also known as Cats Grattan, with me today. Welcome from all the way in UK.
Yeah,
And it's late there. So
it's
we're hoping we can have a
it
conversation and it doesn't get too silly or too sleepy.
It may, yeah, I think we're like approaching midnight shortly, so yeah.
Yes. So just so people can kind of know who you are, I'm going to read your bio. So
Cool.
Karen Katz Grattan works as an ordained celebrant minister. She has 20 years of experience of leading church, building community, and supporting people on their journeys through life. Before moving back to Derby, Karen led a church in I didn't say that right, North Wales. Whilst there, she took a number of funerals and found something she loved. Karen is also on the staff of Festival Church and the chair of trustees of a local pregnancy crisis charity, Talk It Over. Karen loves being a mom to her two sons and all that comes with, even braving being a part of the school PTA whilst in North Wales. She loves shoes and can run in high heels, a skill she is most proud of. When she's not doing life stuff, you can usually find her drinking tea somewhere, probably with a head in a book. Or with friends catching up on their worlds. Katz has been married for over 20 years and lives in Derby with her husband, two sons, and the family cat. So I'm really excited to hear your story because I know you have a very unique one. So tell us about you.
Yeah, so prostatin. So it's a little bit of a weird one because it's got too many T's in it, and it just like sounds good. Yeah, so prostatin is North Wales, and about me, yeah, I come running shoe in heels. So which is like I love pretty shoes, which obviously isn't the reason I'm here to inspire people. Buy more nice shoes. No, so yeah, me, I started off as a youth worker many years ago. I came to Derby as a youth worker in a local church, loved what I did. Never thought I'd do anything other than work with teenagers because they're just the best thing ever. And like just my life started to change. So worked as a youth worker, had my first child, had my eldest, he's now 16. So I just wear a lot of moisturizer. That's why I look young. And it's the good lighting. People are like, really? Yeah. And I was older when I had him as well. So had Mr. Noah when I was 25. Had my second child, Eli, and then just really knew that youth work wasn't for me anymore. Loved youth work, was involved in a local church, was involved in social justice stuff, really wanted to make work around me. And then went on this real journey from 2012. So we're now talking almost 12 years ago of, okay, so what next for me? Because I always thought I'd do this. This was my always thing. This was my, I was always going to do this. And I went and got a job part time. I went and got temping jobs around my children, worked strange hours, sorted mail out, did all sorts of strange things. And if you've ever been around Christendom, around Christianity, like people always tell you this, oh, there's so much you do that's so useful and like you'll learn about and God will use that. And I'm like, I sorted Christmas cards out for Royal Mail, our postal system. That is never going to be a useful skill. And we were just so we're on this massive, it was true though, isn't it? Like, stop saying silly things, people. Like, it's just a job. That bit was just a job. But learn about people and learn about different things in life. Before I had my children, I was involved in a few funerals, and asked to take part in them as like a youth worker at the church, perhaps as staff. Got used to them. And so it went from there, really. So then when my children got a little bit older, my husband's job took us to North Wales. There was a church there as well. And so I became the church leader, the pastor of the church in North Wales. And whilst there, so North Wales in prostatin especially, it's a retirement town. I call it the Costa del Geriatric. So my congregation was 80-year-olds. I had seven over 95-year-olds in the church. This is a lot of old people. And so I got very used to recycled teenagers. And so one, I was really good as a youth worker, and now I was really good with these like 70-year-olds who wanted a new purpose in life. But like, I've retired, what do I do now? Just like so much energy still, but I'd retired. And so kind of, and then whilst I was there in the midst of all that, there was a lady in the community who died, who was in her 50s, who always had her nails painted. Well, I always have my nails done. Didn't want the traditional. She wanted more of a celebration of life, and so the local funeral directors here contacted me and said, "Hey, we know you've taken funerals in the past. I think it's like about four or five in my life at that point. Could you do her service?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay." I kind of knew her family, so I knew her grandchildren because they were the same kids club as my kids. So there was kind of a connection. And so yes, that was my like first proper funeral on my own, and it was, I think there was like 150, 200 people there, and I was like, "Okay, here we go. This is going to be different." And then time moved on, and my husband's job changed. He started working for an NGO. We knew we were moving back to Derby because he needed to be Midlands based in the UK because of work. And so I was like, okay, what next? My kids are now, my eldest was approaching like secondary school age here. So he was approaching 11, 12. Okay, what do I do now? My kids are older. I didn't have a church such to come back into to lead. So it was like, right, well, pioneer church stuff. But in the meantime, how am I going to earn? What we're going to do? Because I've got this spare time now. So I did what I thought I knew I could do, which is like, oh, I'll go and find secondary school work, I'll temp, I'll go and sort mail or something, all those temp things I'd done. And instead, the funeral directors in Prestatyn said, "Hey, you were really good at what you did." And I was like, "Really? It was a few funerals. No, you're really good." And so the funeral directors there were like, "You really need to introduce yourself to funeral directors here." So in the UK, you go and introduce yourself to funeral directors, and they then book you for services. And that was 2019, end of. So literally just as we were going into the Christmas. So I went to two funeral directors in the start of 2020. So that was January, February. And then in the UK, March the 25th, I think it was, or something like that. I can't remember. We hit lockdown. And that's when our COVID rates went up. That was like the year of COVID. Well, I don't have any pre-existing health conditions. I have at no risk. I've been around people at that time. I'm used to crisis. So funeral directors looked at me and were just like, "Brilliant, young, healthy, can deal with Zoom, can connect with people. Hey, let's try." And so then I ended up taking more funerals, thinking I'd be taking a few sweet granny funerals. That didn't happen with me. I get the real wild stories in my life, in my funerals, and the real challenging ones as well. So that was towards the end of 2020, kind of started to build. 2021 built a little bit more, and so it became less of a, oh, hey, I'll kind of do this a little bit and like work it round to. This is becoming a full-time job, which is where we're at now. So I lead a small kind of church plant thing here that we're like developing and like do church stuff with family, with friends. And just kind of community based, but at the same time, then funerals is what I do, and just connecting with people at actually their worst point, the worst part of their lives for most people. So yeah, so that's kind of me and how I've ended up here.
So many times we think of funerals, we want it to be a celebration of life, but I mean, you're so sad when that's happening. You're just so sad. So how is it that you connect with people? What is it that you do that makes it just for a better experience?
Okay, that's a really good question. I think I'm real. So I sat talking to a family today, and actually this family I am very connected to. I did the funeral of their 32-year-old daughter who had health condition, a health pre-existing health condition. And I did her service a year and a half ago. And she literally just dropped dead in their bedroom one day, and they were downstairs in the house, which is horrendous. But the day that this girl, so she was they knew from the moment she was born that she would at some point, and she'd reached 32, which amazed them. She had younger siblings as well in the like, late 20s. But the day she died, she actually had stolen her mum's jeans. So I was wearing her mum's jeans and had borrowed her mum's hairdryer, which she'd snuck back. And so one of the first things I went in the house, and one of the first things, this was like a year and a half ago, the family said was, she and the mum said, "She nicked my jeans." And it just became, oh my gosh, my 32-year-old daughter died in my jeans that I just bought. And so that story stayed, and she didn't want at that point, she didn't want us. They didn't want a hymn at the funeral, at the crematorium. Instead, what they wanted was they wanted Stacey's favorite song as a ca favorite song on karaoke, and she was non-verbal. So they were like, her favorite song on karaoke was "Girls Just Want to Have Fun" by Cyndi Lauper. Can you lead a congregation in "Girls Just Want to Have Fun"? So I was like, okay, well, my best karaoke voice, we've got this. Come on, people. And so we did, and she had I remember the day really well. It was October 2023, 2022, sorry. And she had like, we were wearing rainbow scarves, and she loved unicorns. So there was unicorns like lights around the coffin and stuff. And then a month later, her dad's sister died. And just, but her dad's sister had been at the funeral, and so her dad's sister, when I said, when I get to the point of dying, not thinking, because she was in her late 50s, I want this. I want a celebration of my life. I want to do it my way. And I didn't think that a month later I'd be taking this lady's funeral. Time moved on with that family, and I've taken the mum's uncle's funeral. So now Stacey's mum's dad's died, and so I was there today. And because I've got that relationship with them now, because I'm real, like, they were asking me about my kids, they were asking me about my world as well as their world. And their daughter-in-law came, I was like, oh, hey, and the dogs. And so I think some of it is, when I first arrive at a family home, I appreciate, like, this is the worst possible thing. And the worst possible thing I could say is one of those stupid phrases I've just mentioned, like, oh, everything happens for a reason. And so I learned really early on just to kind of go and say, hey, this is rubbish. I know that when I turn up at your house, it's not a good thing. I know I'm a bit like the angel of death, and I'm sorry. But what does your loved one want? What would you want? What would you want a celebration of life? And so it might be really hard for me to get the, like, to get through the service myself, but I'd switch off and just be like, right, okay, I'm there. This is my gift. This is what I can do for this family. I can help them, and I can make sure that the last thing I do, that they, like, the last thing that they have for that person is a celebration, is exactly what that person's wanted. And so it comes in various shapes and sizes, depending on the age and depending on the person. But it's about making that ritual, that rite of passage, appropriate. But I think I picked up a lot as well from lockdown, because we had here in the UK especially just so many crazy rules about what you could and couldn't do, that I learned to adapt. So we weren't, obviously we had these like phrases here in the UK, so like hands, face, space. So you had to be 6 meters apart. So you couldn't hug, and funerals, it's very much you have tactile, and you want to shake people's hands, and just especially those who've just lost someone. So I'd been to Zambia, and they do this like kind of greeting where they bow to each other and clap, Ensha, Ensha. And so very early on would start, just I'd clap at my families, and I'd write cards to them after the service, and just find ways of, beyond the physical, like showing honor and respect. And they, I guess that's just kind of, and I always think, what would, if I was in this scenario right now, if this was me in this room, and I was the person, what would I want? What would I want if my child had died? What would I want if my dad had died? What would I want to be asked? And even if you go through, I think even if you go through grief very, very quickly at the same time, it's different. And I've seen that with families where they've lost people very close. It's different every time. And so just listen and be present, really, and be real. Which is probably what makes it easier for people, I think.
Yeah, because I, you know, there's not that many people, I don't think, that have a plan for how they want their funeral to be.
No, but I wish they did.
Yeah, I actually, when I was in college, I took a class called On Death and Dying, which sounds really morbid, but actually it was great, a great class, and it went over a lot of Kubler-Ross's things on death and dying. But we actually did that. We wrote our own funeral service.
Which is
We said
brilliant.
which music we wanted to have and things like that. And I thought it was very, even at that young age, it was very healing thinking, okay, this is what I want people to hear at my funeral. This is my last things I want to be,
Yeah.
them to remember about me.
Exactly. I think since being in the industry, I have been a lot more open about the whole death and dying thing. My boys have grown up in a very real home. Where's your mum? Our mum's leading a church service. Our mum's like dealing with a social justice issue. Or we're starting up a food bank. Dad's off with an NGO. Like, dad's in Uganda. My mum is, she's back in a bit. She just started. So my kids have really grown up around that. But my eldest, when he did his work experience, actually did a local crematorium, and just like at 15 was totally okay with celebrations of life, with funerals, with services, with coffins, because it's a part of life. And I know you're saying that it's such a, I think it's a healthy thing to be able to, ultimately it's a, everybody's going through that. We're all going to die. There are two things in life, and I don't even know who did the quote. There's two things in life that are guaranteed: death and taxes, especially here in the UK. So, but like death, especially, like it's going to happen, but nobody talks about it. And maybe, I don't know. I know in the UK with the Victorian era, like stiff upper lip. I have met people who have never been to a funeral and they are in their 70s. What? You have avoided death until this point, until your parents has, like, that isn't emotionally healthy for you. That isn't actually normal. So write your wishes, tell us what you want. My kids are very used to, during meal times, me shouting, "I really like this song," if it's on like the Alexa and stuff. "Maybe have this at my funeral." Or the boys are like, they just, it's a part of our conversations. Very healthy conversation. So we recently lost my grandma, who was 90, but she'd actually written her songs for her funeral. I was strict instructions 15 years ago, and it was so easy. Oh, this is what I'm doing. Even down to, and bearing in mind, I wasn't taking funerals 15, 16 years ago. She'd even written down that I was taking her funeral. I was like, "Well, grandma, there we go." All right then, glad I know what I'm doing now. So yeah, so it's, I think it's, so many positives of it. Because what if what you were, you're, I think, you were saying about us living our best lives. If we know where we want to end up, you know what your end goal is, actually you can live better now. And so yeah, and the amount of times bearers, so people who carry the coffins, we've got a lot of female bearers in the UK here in this area. And they've got this one phrase, the girls, and they'll say, "I'm here for a good time, not a long time." And they just live for the moment. And it's, sometimes I'm like, "What are you lot up to now?" But there's that real sense of, "I'm here to make a difference now." So.
And how do you start those conversations with your kids or even your adult children? Because I remember this was several years ago. My dad said, we want to talk to you guys about something, and they want to talk to us about basically when they die and where the money's going. And at that time, I really didn't want to talk about it. And I'm like, I don't
Yeah.
want to talk about this. I said, you can give your money to anybody you want. You don't have to even give it to me. Just let's not talk about, I don't want to talk about you not being here. I was totally closed
Yeah.
off. I think I was like in college maybe, and I was like,
Yeah, it's
did not
hard,
want to
isn't
talk about, I didn't even want to talk about basically
it?
their estate, because
Yeah.
then I would have to think about that they're not there. So
Yeah.
how do you start conversations so people can be comfortable and feel
Yeah.
safe and
I
not
think,
going, in the sad stuff?
yeah, I think you just have to. I also say when I introduce myself to family, sometimes I'm like, "Hey, I know I'm here," and I'm like that really cruel person's going to come and just rip the plaster off, because the easiest way to get rid of a plaster is obviously just to, off. If you ease it, it just hurts more. And so I think sometimes with conversations people don't want to have, actually the best thing to do is just to be like, "Hey, we're going to have this conversation. I know what you're saying about estate, but do you know how many times I go into family homes and there's a division because that's not been discussed? Because the executor has taken over, because someone's assumed something that's never been communicated." And so I always say to people, give others the gift of not having to have that painful conversation of, Well, who is responsible? So I am probably in my family the worst, because even my in-laws, I'm like, hey, so your funeral plan then? Hey, so what is it you want again? So my father-in-law was ill recently, and I was like, I'm just checking. I'm just checking. Because I know in moments of grief, when you're going through the trauma of losing somebody, you don't think straight. And you're not thinking even of practical stuff. Sometimes, and there are a lot of bad people out there who in your time of need just swoop in, and you want the best for people. And so, yeah, wills really important, estates really important, writing your funeral wishes, even if something as simple as do not play this piece of music at my funeral. Yeah, like I don't like. So I'm doing a funeral for an old lady in a few weeks. She's 97, and she hated Elton John. She's like, I don't like Elton John. She liked the song Candle in the Wind. So I'm like, we'll have to find a piano version. But just knowing she didn't like Elton John meant that her last piece of music wasn't Elton John, which would have been like, why would you want that? She never liked him. You know, just even if it's don't wear black, or you have to wear black, or and so I think there's little things you can say, your likes, your dislikes. Those conversations, I think, can be openers. I think TV shows often show death. Books, again, there's so many books. Like you start reading a book and you're like, oh, someone's died. That can be an opener. There's things happening on social media all the time. So in the UK, we've just lost a radio presenter. Has died. He was on the radio on Sunday, and he was supposed to be on this coming Sunday, and he's died. And so that's people have he was only young, so people are like, hey, what is that? The Queen dying here actually massively impacted us as a nation. There's another opener. And so whilst people avoid it, actually, my thing is I try and take it out the shadows, try to take it out the darkness, because when you put light on things, it's cleansing. And light is cleansing. So let's bring it out of the shadows. Let's talk. Let's make it, not scary. And have those tough conversations, like, this is what I want. Or even be really nice. And do you know, with like estate stuff, so maybe it doesn't happen in America, but in the UK, people stick labels on the bottom of things to let people know whose they are. Label your stuff, even, you know? I know. Label who it's going to. Put a sticker on it, because then if it's in your writing, no one can argue. I know you'll think how morbid, but I'm like, how practical.
That is more practical. That is for sure more practical. So some people, they have like the funeral and they might not really invite many people, but then maybe like, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months later, instead of having like the funeral, they have a memorial. Why would people do that? Is it because they're in too much grief then, or do they just want to be able to have it celebrated?
Yeah,
Or...
I think that's possibly less common here than perhaps in the States. So but in we that does happen. So I did a service last year. There was a family, and they wanted their goodbye, their farewelling, to be them privately. But she was a really outgoing person, and she wanted a summer party. So she died in the March, and so in the I think it was the July, the end of July, they had a big summer party for her, because that's what she wanted, and that was very much her. And so the service itself was very quiet and somber, with a couple of pieces of music that we knew she would like. But then a few months later, I think that's a nice thing to do, to celebrate your loved one at different times. Again, that's, I think it's great. Just celebrate people. Like we celebrate all sorts, you have high days and holidays, we have high days and holidays. And I think that's important. It's the same in our lives, in our patterned lives. So I think it's a little bit of that. And people do grief differently, and it's right. However you feel it's right, it's right. So yeah. So I would say that would be a reason I would go with. So
Is there any other advice you would have on just helping people be more prepared for when that happens. We all know it's going to happen, but
Yeah.
there are things we can do. I don't know, even our own mindset or self-care or
Yeah,
self-love.
definitely. Definitely. So I think for me in doing what I do, so we've just obviously just well, so in the UK we've got Ash Wednesday, which hasn't long just been here. And one of the things of Ash Wednesday it says is from dust you will form to dust you'll return. And I think, I am special because I am just dust. I am loved because I am just dust. And also I accept that, you know what, if tomorrow I don't wake up, it will be very sad. However, the world will keep spinning. And I'm very secure in that. And so because of that, I'm able to live the day right. And I think, how can we be emotionally prepared? Well, I think preparing our those around us for the fact that, if we know we have illnesses within our family, be aware of that. Don't fear it, but be aware of that. So there's so many families I've done not just one service, but perhaps three or four. And by the time you get to the second or third, they're no longer in fear. So yeah, and I think as well, it's knowing where you're going. That sounds really, but know where you're going. Know where your eternity, where you're going. Know your plans, know your belief systems, and believe in your belief systems and your spirituality. I'd say as well, that's you have to know that. You have to know. But I think coming back to that whole living your best life now, if you know at some point you're going, you're going to live far stronger than if, oh, well, I can just do it tomorrow. Oh, I can just do it, and I've been fortunate to plan funerals with people who are dying, who I know I'm going to take their service, and they live with more intention, far more intention. And that's just, I think that's because they have an end date almost, don't they? So most of them prove the end date wrong, but intentionality. So yeah, that's a big thing as well.
And I start this out in when I in this book that I wrote, and I said, when you look back at the end of your life, are you going to be proud? Are you going to be happy with what you did? And we're not, none of us are perfect. None of us can make, things happen in life. But how can we just accept
Yeah.
ourselves, accept our imperfections?
I love our imperfections. I love telling the story at a funeral of somebody who's not perfect. I never tell perfect stories at funerals because here's the thing, no one's perfect. And so if I stand there saying, and they were this, and they were this, and they were this, some people aren't the best cook. So I'm going to talk about the fact they burnt an apple pie because that's important. Some people are like, oh, they were a terrible singer. Or, oh, they were grumpy granddad. He was so grumpy. Or the girl I was talking about, Stacey, she used to throw hairbrushes at people in just like, oh, and throw a hairbrush because we're so not perfect. But what you're saying about looking back on your life, I think, especially for women, we've kind of been sold this, we have to have it all together. We have to be able to do everything. And we don't. And I look and go, we can have it all, but we have to pace ourselves with it all. And I've looked at some of the incredible women whose stories I've told. And it's honestly the thing that's amazed me the most is they're not just like financially wealthy, but they're wealthy with their relationships, the friendships. They're emotionally wealthy. They've rested, they've had fun. And I always say to people, right, you can have as much money as you want. Do you know what? If you've not had a laugh, if you t and great, you've had the most expensive casket on the planet, but you've only got seven people in the room because nobody else knew because you didn't talk to anybody else. It's pointless. So it's about balance, and being proud of that as well. So yeah, so it's all of the above, and isn't it? It's doing life, with people.
Exactly. Now I want to go back to the shoes and the running.
Oh.
Now you're a runner, but you don't always run in your high heels.
No. So Yes, so I ran a half marathon in Rwanda. So how did that happen? Well, so that's why I come in heels. So I was pregnant with my second child, had a real difficult time, gave birth to him and retained my placenta. So it was very poorly. I had a home birth intentionally, which I know again is probably fries folks' brains in the state, but I intentionally had a home birth. I had no pain relief. I was very good at the birthing thing. However, my placenta decided it wasn't coming away, and which meant I was taken to the hospital in the middle of the night. It became quite serious. They call it a manual evacuation. Basically, they punch your placenta out of you. It's a lovely experience. No one I'd ever go for again. But in the process, it really hurt. They cracked my coccyx and moved one of my little bones in the back on my back. It was emergency surgery. I lost a lot of blood. Came round and they were like, "Hey, we're not sure you'll be able to have any more children." In fact, their exact words to me were, they got this like junior doctor or someone to come up and was just like, "Hey, so we're just gonna have to see how it all heals." And I was like, "Pardon, what now? You what?" But because of that, they'd actually, in the process, I'd lost all the muscle tone in my stomach and everything, pregnancy, but also because of the whole process. And because they caused some damage, they were like, "Hey, you'll be able to walk, but running might be a challenge." So 6 weeks after I had Eli, if I stood up and bent slightly because I had no tone, core stability, I'd fall over. I was like a weeble, just, just couldn't plank, couldn't do sit-ups, couldn't. And here I was with a 3-year-old and a tiny baby, and just like I was fit and healthy. What happened? So over time, just for my own health, would started to walk, started to do like little jogs around the park, that kind of thing. I wouldn't say I was ever an amazing runner. And then there was an opportunity to go and run for a child survival program in Rwanda, and it was all about a mother and baby unit, and it was about helping mums give birth. And I know that had I give birth in Rwanda or any other nation that wasn't as well equipped as I was in the UK, I would have died for the amount of loss of blood, for the complications. I was seriously ill, yes, but I survived, and so it felt like a reason to run. And so I got sponsors and I went to run in Rwanda. I just forgot the bit. I didn't Google, didn't do enough information. So I trained in Prestatyn, which is very flat and at sea level. And Rwanda's the land of a thousand hills, which I realized as we landed. And I was like, who put all these hills there? Literally, as the plane landed, I went, "Oh." And people were like, "What do you mean? Oh, it's the land of a thousand hills." I was like, I did not get that memo, people. So I was like running, just but even as I was running out there, like just those, it ended up being slightly more than a half marathon, but there was one point on the run where I was just sobbing as I was running, because I really went through a difficult, after having had my second, I had postnatal depression, and kind of really went into a dark place. Very, no one believes that now. Like, oh my gosh, how? I'm like, you can trust me. You can hide it really well. But that running, that run was like, it was just breaking so many mindsets in me. It was breaking through so many barriers. There was one point on the run where I had children from a village running with me, and they were holding my hands and just dish out, "Mzungu, Mzungu," so white person as you're running. And they were running in flip-flops twice the speed of me in trackies, and I'm like in shorts and trainers and like sweating at 7 o'clock in the morning. But I just remember thinking, this is the best school run ever, because I nearly didn't have the opportunity to do a school run because they almost lost me in the hospital. I was that seriously ill. I did lose that much blood. They did sit my husband in a relative's room with my newborn, 6-week, 6-hour-old baby. They didn't know how I was going to respond. So having done all of that, it was like, well, I can do this. I can do this. I can run this. And so ran and probably left part of my doubting self in the ground in Rwanda. I remember finishing the run and just sitting there on this plastic chair in the blazing sunshine going, I did this, and it hurt, and it really hurt, but I'd do it again and again. And I do it again and again for more mums to be able to have that privilege, that safety. And then the team I was with, I think we managed to, there was basically we funded the project for 3 or 4 years. So to know that my blood, sweat, and tears, I mean, there were tears. I'm not a fan of running if I, like, oh, I'll do it. But yeah, so that kind of is my reason I went into a half marathon. And so now I look back and if I'm having a tough day and look at some and I'm able to share with families as well. Like, do you know what? I had a really tough time after having my second child. Do you know what? Like, we all go through stuff and not necessarily death, but we all go through challenges in life. And do you know what? You're gonna get through this. Just hold on for one more day. You're gonna be okay. And just yeah. So that was my run.
Yeah,
A few
that's
years ago
quite a
now.
run, like a healing run.
It really was yeah, and I would say to you, sometimes you got to set yourself a goal, haven't you? And just go for it. And in the middle of it all, I remember my sister texted me that day. So I've got a 2-year-old younger sister by 2 years. And she knew I liked Take That, which was a boy band that I adored growing up. And she just sent me this thing saying, there's a song called Shine, and it was just like, come on, it's time to show the world. It's time to show the world what's been in you all along. And even now, I look back and get emotional about it because I just think, like, yeah, it is. All I went through could have been such a different story, but instead, it was one of sitting in huts, of running in Rwanda, of dealing with some stuff that I didn't even know was in me. Some of the, I can't do this. Do you know what? You're out on a dirt road in the middle of Africa. Whether you do it, you think you can do it or not, you're doing it because you ain't, no one's going to come to get you. You got to keep moving. So this is life. The bus isn't coming. You'd crew, like, there's a guy that just will come and check on you, but they're leaving you to the finishing line. And you hear those drums and you make the finishing line. You just know something's happened in me. I've done something now.
Was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that experience. So now you wrote a book. Why don't you tell us about your book?
My book, the finale. So I shall just put it there. It's my little the finale. So obviously the finale is the last act of your life, or the final piece of music. And so we have something in the UK called Desert Island Discs, where you choose your discs that you like throughout your life, which I guess is a bit like at a funeral, you choose your songs. And so what I realized was people choose songs that tell stories of their lives. And so I was approached by a publisher. I had a few funny stories, a few strange stories. I always say to people, do you know how you expect like sweet old granny funeral? Like, oh, it's going to be so cute and all the family's going to be there. Yeah. See, I get the ones where seven girlfriends turn up and like they all turn up with a rose. I mean, one of them realizes there's another girlfriend and then you've got an argument or two families have had an argument and they sit either side of the chapel and there's a dog in the chapel. Why not? I once led the Lord's Prayer with a three-legged greyhound licking my foot. And so all these strange things were happening. And people are like, you should write a book. They're like, are you winding me up? I'm like, I've dumbed the story down. I've actually not made it as bad as what was happening. And so as that started happening more and more, I was like sharing the story. I mean, so behind the book, there was one particular story which I'll share, which was, it's in the middle of the book. So I went to go meet this family. The lady who I went to meet had been in an accident, an industrial accident, so it didn't have any legs below the knee. So I was told that her carer would be there, which was her niece. Again, this was not a strange thing. Tiny, tiny little terraced house. So small, very tiny house. So I knock on the door. The niece opens the door. I go into the front room. There's somebody else in the front room. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And that's normal because people have all sorts of people there, like randomers. And so I sit down, let's all introduce ourselves. I'm so sorry for your loss of your husband. And the lady in front of me is like, starts crying. And the lady to the right of me says, I don't know why she's crying. She's not the only one who lost him. And she was much younger, this lady. And I was just like, whoa, that was weird. Okay, can we all introduce ourselves? And so my name's whoever, I'm his wife. I says, oh, when you're the niece and you're here to look after her. And she went, oh no. She said, I'm here in case he wants to talk. He told me this morning he wanted a blue suit. And I was like, sorry. So she said, oh, I speak to the dead. And I was like, Brilliant. Okay. Fantastic. So now I'm like, okay, anyone, if someone's going to come out and just be like, only joking, this isn't real. We're just setting you up. And as I turn, the lady in the corner says, she's like, oh, my name's whatever. And she says, and I'm his lover. And I, like, that was my expression. I went, oh, right. Well, and because I was scrambling in my brain processing what I was hearing, wife, lover in the same room, live in the same house. I'm like, this is getting weirder. Niece who talked to the dead. And so, without a second thought, I looked up on the mantelpiece and saw this beautiful vase. And I turn around and say, oh, what a beautiful vase. And she who speaks to the dead points to the vase and says, oh no, that's his first wife. I brought her ashes in. And I was like, are you for real? Like, you'd see it on a sitcom. I was like, what? So, just clear this up. I went, wife, you speak to the dead. You're the lover, first wife. And the one who's, she went, well, I'm pleased you understand. Okay. Right then, what do we want? And it just went stranger from there. And so after that one story, so they wanted to sing Cher, It's in His Kiss. I'm like, we are not singing that at a funeral. There is a line. So that's kind of, so my book then is like lessons I've learned at funerals, so life lessons, but it asks questions, sharing some of my story, some of the lessons I've learned. The last chapter is about a friend who died and how, do you know, he never really academically excelled, never financially excelled, but just had a heart of gold, and how he just always had the key. He just was a key keeper. He was just a safe person. And so just sharing that to others, we not might not be like seem, you know, successful, but we can make such a difference in people's lives. So that was him sharing some just different stories of different people, some of the tragic stories, but also some of the fun things and asking questions. So the finale became 12 life lessons from funerals. And we're just with the hope of actually, if people are struggling to talk about death, it might help them a bit. It might make them smile. Most people read chapter one and get through it not too bad because it reflects on COVID as well, because that was a real part of, but by chapter two, they're like, you made me cry. I'm sorry. It's not intentional. But that's a part. Grief and joy and sorrow are best mates. They're twins, aren't they? You feel joy and you feel sorrow at the same time. That's why we laugh and cry and then cry and then laugh and then everything, all our emotions in one. So yeah.
So true. So now, if people want to connect with you, say they're local and they would like a funeral done, or
Yeah.
how to get your book, or how do they do that?
Okay, so I'm on Instagram as Karen Grattan. I'm on Facebook. So I have an email. I've got a website which is a unique story. My book is available on Amazon and on the Publish You website. So it's on two websites. If you're local to me, you'll find me. So yeah, just and if I mean across the UK, I'd say especially. I mean, in the States, I'd love to speak to people. But if I can help people, just approach the whole area of death. And if I can support people, even if it's like, hey, I'm in the States and I don't quite know what I want. Can we just chat through what I want? Or I want my celebration of life. I want this. Or then yeah, get in contact if I can help people. I've helped with the celebrants. I've written kind of bits for people, other people to use. Just because it's a gift I've got, and I love that other people are able to then benefit from that and very much see what I do as I just lend my voice to your story and I just bring your story to life. I don't make the story, you make the story of your life. I just happen to have the voice that can do that for the time for now. So, yeah.
Thank you. That's beautiful. So now I have a personal question. What gives you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now?
Do you know what? This is going to sound like such a mummy question, but my boys are thriving and I'm just, and it's not always been easy. My boy. So, like I've mentioned about my postnatal depression. So, with my youngest, we didn't really bond particularly well, but he's just doing so well. And his history teacher rang me the day and was like, "Hey, you've just done such a good job with him as parents." And I just sat there crying, going, "I just love my boys." And that's really bringing a smile to my face, just seeing them succeed. And so, yeah, I would say that is at the moment. Ask me in a few weeks' time, I might be like, "Oh my gosh, my children!" But also, I would say, so that's probably my most joy and fulfillment is them. My other thing would be just that whole fitness thing for me, and just having this, like, I've got to a point now where I'm actually stronger in my core. I'm fitter than I've ever been. And my boys think that's ace, that mum can lift the same weights as their 16-year-old and stuff. So that's brilliant as well.
That's pretty exciting, yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the
Thank
podcast today
you for your time.
and for sharing your wisdom, your stories. I have one last question before we complete. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Live for the moment. Live for the moment. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.